So the title of my talk is Measurement and Modeling of Soil Wetness and Stream Flow in Snowmelt-Driven Mountainous Terrain. This is work carried out near Boise, Idaho. That's where the pretty picture is from. I'm doing this work, I'm from the University of Wyoming. I'm doing this together with Jim McNamara of Boise State University, Mark Seifert of USDA at Boise, and David Chandler, who is now at Kansas State University. Water in the western U.S. is a big issue. Snowmelt plays a major role. Snowmelt from mountainous areas is probably the most important source of water in the western U.S. It can also be a danger. Rapid snowmelt in spring may lead to localized flooding. And it's a very complicated process to study because there's a lot of processes involved: climate, vegetation, geomorphology. So to predict quantity and timing of runoff is difficult. In Boise, we look at a very small watershed, which is part of a bigger research area. It's called Dry Creek Experimental Area near Boise, Idaho. The pictures show the small catchment on the right. In the summer, it's hot and dry. In the winter, it's cold and the snowpack develops. The experimental area was established in 1999. We monitor the weather through a simple met station, snowpack, soil moisture, soil temperature, and stream flow. There's a whole bunch of factors involved in generating runoff from snowmelt, so the best way to study it is through a modeling approach. And we focused our efforts not only on surface flow, but also on subsurface lateral flow. Some words on how to couple surface runoff, vertical soil water flow, so that's in the soil, and lateral soil water flow in mountainous terrain. Lateral soil water flow is flow across the soil bedrock interface. There's no fixed water table in these regions. There can only be a perched water table on top of the bedrock temporarily. If you want to attack this in a very physical way, you would have to solve the 3D Richards equation. That's technically sound, but computationally expensive. Another way of looking at it is through numerical solution of 2D overland flow equations, where you, in two dimensions, you describe the flow of water across the surface for surface runoff. Or for subsurface lateral flow, you can think of the Businesky equation. These guys are impractical because they assume saturated flow. In case of surface runoff, it's a water layer on top of the surface. In case of subsurface runoff, lateral flow, it's a saturated water layer on top of the bedrock. Both of these things can occur, but they occur only locally and temporarily. So what's the alternative? I've tried out several things, and this kind of work in progress, the thing that I'm doing now and works quite well, is to calculate lateral water fluxes, both surface and lateral subsurface, through some simple equations, and to use those water flux terms as source terms for the 1D vertical Richards equation. It's not something that I'm really proud of, but I think it might be the most practical solution. So that results in the following distributed watershed model. So on the right, you see the watershed. You divide it up into grid cells. For each grid cell, you solve the one-dimensional water flow equation. Since we are dealing with snow, you have to do also all the heat transport. So you have both water flow equation and heat transport equation. So at the beginning of each time step, which is 15 minutes, I start out by estimating surface and subsurface lateral flow and heat transport. Then I do an iterative canopy energy balance calculation, which gives me the temperature of the canopy, basically the temperature of the leaves. Then I do an iterative surface energy balance calculation that gives me the surface temperature, and the surface can be the snow or it can be the soil. And then I end the time step with a 1D vertical soil water flow and heat transport calculation. These are the simple equations that I use to assess these lateral fluxes for surface runoff. This is just a modified Manning equation where the discharge is equal to the h is the thickness of the water layer on top of the surface if there's ponding, s is the slope, and n is a roughness coefficient. Then lateral subsurface flow, that's Keith Bevan's approximation for steep slopes, that the hydraulic gradient equals the land surface slope. You get a very simple equation that says discharge is conductivity times the thickness of this saturated zone on top of the bedrock times the slope of the land surface. And then finally, stream flow, all the water that ponds at the outlet of the catchment, I remove from the model and I consider that the stream flow. Then this one-dimensional Richards equation. Officially you have to iterate to solve the Richards equation, and that takes up a lot of computer time. It means that you have to take small time steps and small grid spacings. I found this non-iterative solution to the Richards equation, which is part of a climate model developed by NCAR. It's really neat. It starts out with a mass balance equation. If you picture one grid cell, then the flux that comes into that grid cell minus the flux that goes out of that grid cell minus whatever sink or source you have determines the change in water content for that grid cell. Then you have to determine these water fluxes, so that those are the soil water flux at the fraction sigma through the time step, and you estimate those from a Taylor series type of thing. So the flux that you're interested in equals the flux at the beginning of the time step plus the derivative of the flux with water content at the beginning of the time step. So you need two pieces of information, the flux at the beginning of the time step and the change in flux at the beginning of the time step, and that gives you an estimate for the flux at the end of your time step. This is the difficult part, the other parts are easy. This is the soil water flux at the beginning of the time step, that's just the Darcy equation. And then these are the derivatives, which look ugly, but you can just calculate them from this guy. What results is a simple matrix that you can solve without iteration for the change in water content. One-dimensional vertical soil heat transport, that's the equation that everybody uses. This is a linear equation that accounts for both heat conduction, heat convection, and heat sources or sinks, and that requires no iteration. So by taking the water flow equation like I did and the heat transport equation, I can move through a time step without any iterations. Application of the model. This again, if you remember the pictures, is this small watershed. The pictures were taken from here looking up into the small watershed. We have a weir where we measure outflow. There's a met station. And here there's a snow sensor location. These are contour lines for elevation. At the snow sensor location, we not only measure snow depth, but also soil water content with depth and soil temperature with depth. To kind of test the model, I do a one-year simulation starting in the summer when everything is nice and dry. That gives you a nice initial condition, and ending in the summer. And for the calculations that I show here, the bottom boundary condition is deep percolation in the bedrock depends on a perched water table. So basically you have a porous material, the soil, underneath that you have a bedrock which is fractured, and the only way water is going to percolate into these fractures is when positive pressure develops on top of the bedrock. Then some results for this one-year calculation. This is the surface energy balance for one spot, so for the snow sensor location. Starting in August, ending in August, this is net solar radiation. here this is where the snowpack is sitting on the soil, and snow has a high albedo, so it reflects a lot of light. And once the snowpack is gone, the net solar incoming solar radiation becomes higher. And here are all the other energy balance terms: long wave radiation, sensible heat, latent heat flux due to soil evaporation, and latent heat flux due to transpiration. So you can, for example, the transpiration part, you can really see that transpiration starts once the snowpack is gone, goes up, and then towards the end of summer it dies down again. These are just calculations. This is snow depth at this sensor location, both measured and simulated. Snow is very complex stuff. It changes all the time. The density changes. Its reflective properties change. So it's quite difficult material to simulate. But I used a lot of equations coming from Snowtherm, which is developed at the U.S. Corps of Army Engineers, or however you call that. And it seems to work quite well. It captures the whole thing well. The timing is reasonably good. Only the melting period is slightly off. But you see that this snow, it's quite dynamic stuff. And then soil water content, that doesn't look good. And I will explain you why. So this is at the snow sensor location. These are measured data. These are measurements at five depths. You see in the summer it's dry. In the fall it starts to wet up. Here there's snow sitting on top of the soil, keeping everything wet because there's continuous melting from the bottom of the snowpack. Snow starts to melt, and then plants become active and take up all the water, and you end up where you started, at a very dry condition. Simulated values, this early part is okay. This is a 1 meter soil profile which I simulated using only 9 layers, which you can do with this non-iterative Richards equation. So very large grid spacing. Here it becomes very messy, and this is due to the bottom boundary condition, where you have the requirement that you have a saturated zone at the bottom of your soil layer to induce either deep percolation or lateral flow across the soil bedrock interface. And this is my model, and you can clearly see that in reality that doesn't happen. So we need to work on this. Something that looks a lot better is soil temperature. Again, at five different depths. Here is the measured values. We start warm. This is winter period. You see that the soil doesn't really freeze because the snow protects it from the atmosphere. And in the summer it warms up again. And my calculations track this reasonably well. Then stream flow. This is for the entire period. More interesting is the spring melt period. You see that the timing is not too bad, but the amounts are not correct. And this is related to this soil water content problem. So, summary of results. Snow depth and soil temperature are calculated accurately, indicating that the surface energy balance is correct. Soil water content and stream flow are overestimated, indicating that what happens at the bottom boundary condition needs work. So I played around a little bit just before coming here. And these are some alternatives for this partitioning of deep percolation and lateral subsurface flow. These two graphs, this is soil water content, this is stream flow. This is when I change the bottom boundary condition for deep percolation into free drainage condition, assuming that some of these fractures of the bedrock are filled with soil. If they are filled with soil, then you don't need this positive pressure at the soil bedrock interface to get deep percolation. So what you see is that the soil water content now doesn't have to go to saturation to induce flow, but it works so well that I eliminated all stream flow. Everything goes through the bottom. So nice try, but doesn't work. Then another scenario is now I changed condition for lateral subsurface flow. We know that flow across bedrock on steep slopes, you don't need saturation. And unsaturated flow can also take care of some lateral flow. So if I put in a different trigger, so not saturation, but if the water content goes above field capacity, then I allow lateral flow across the soil bedrock interface, then the water content looks a bit like this. It looks realistic, but now I still have stream flow, and it actually looks a bit better than the original one, although the timing is a bit different. Conclusion, surface energy balance can be calculated accurately for this particular vegetation, which is shrub dominated, and we are just using standard Meteo data. And simulated soil water content and stream flow are very sensitive to the bottom boundary condition, and that really needs some extra work to see what happens at the interface between soil and bedrock. That's it. Thanks.